Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich, winners of the Brokers Ireland Investment Excellence Award each year since 2014. Now that's reassuring.
Now, a word of warning that some people may find this next conversation distressing. There are some graphic details and listener discretion is advised. Yesterday, five men were sentenced to between 8.5 and 14 years for their involvement in the horrific torture of Natalie Ennis after they pleaded guilty to her false imprisonment and assault causing harm at a flat in Henrietta House in Dublin on the 26th of September last year. Natalie was tortured, stabbed, burned and beaten for 3 hours. Well, just before the programme, I spoke to Natalie and I asked her first how she's doing now.
I'm physically and mentally not normal anymore. They've ruined my life, basically. I'm just overwhelmed at the minute, and I kind of feel a bit numb. With the help of Sunnis, I'd be lost without them, only for them and the guards that came through the door that night. I was gone, but I'm waiting to see a psychiatrist since last year, and I think it's next month I'm up on it. But they've all got psychiatrists in prison, which I just don't agree with, where they've got their psychiatrists and they're all well looked after, but I'm left behind as a victim and I still haven't seen a psychiatrist, but I'm speaking to a counsellor at the minute. Mm.
Natalie, people will have been shocked and stunned and appalled to have heard what you went through. Mm. And I know the men in question were sentenced yesterday for their crimes. What sort of person were you before this happened, before you were tortured?
I am a good person. I am a good person. I'd help anybody. My life before that, I was living grand. I was at the meeting a new girl and we were renting the room, and that's how all that happened to me.
Take us back to the night of September 26th last year. That's just over 10 months ago.
Yeah.
What started all of this?
The fella that we were renting the room off of, he was holding drugs that I wasn't aware of, and I was in the house on my own, and he came back with a fella and says, right, come on, we have to go. But he had a big major mark at the side of his face. It was bad. And he just came in and says, come on, we have to go.
What did you think when you saw that? Did you know there was trouble ahead?
I thought I was just going over to get a hiding or something, because obviously I was living in his house. They were going to blame me on it. But he had others, all sorts in his house. He was a heroin addict himself, and when we'd wake up, he'd have everybody in the sitting room, like, so they were all doing whatever they were doing.
You were then driven to a flat. At this point, were you aware about what was going to happen to you?
No, I didn't know all that was going. I thought I was going to get like a slap or two because I was living in the house, because I didn't think they'd blame me, because I don't even know them personally. So they didn't have me on.
Now, I know this is obviously very difficult, and the details that we heard in court were extremely difficult to hear. So I can't imagine what it was like for you to have gone through this ordeal, this torture at the hands of a group of men. But in as much as you're comfortable with it, Natalie, can you talk me through what they did to you at that flat?
When I first went in, I was sitting on a three seater chair, and they were all just sitting there talking amongst themselves and in and out, selling drugs out of the house that the flat was in. And then next of all, Braxton Rice was sitting on a coffee table at the corner of it, and Sean Conroy was at the other corner, and I was a little bit back on the three seater. And he had a can of Nivea deodorant and a lighter, and he kept coming at me into my face with it. And then he got all my legs with it as well. And then as he was doing that, there was doors behind the chair I was sitting on. So they were coming behind the doors and whacking me with steel poles, batons, hatchets. I got a hatchet into the head as well. And then they were coming at speed. They were running and doing flying kicks and hit me. That's how I lost my teeth. I've a good few missing teeth. They were standing on my face as well while I was at. They got me on the floor, standing on my face, standing all over my body. I had to get a disc removed from my back and all, and some of my spine bone carved. And then I had a blowout elbow as well from blocking myself. And he was just hitting me with steel poles and heated poles. I had to get skin graft on my legs.
Natalie, you endured this for 3 hours.
3 hours.
And you said it felt like 3 days.
And plus they striped me down my face, but it didn't leave scars. Thank God.
Were you conscious at all times? Were you aware what they were doing?
Yeah, I was conscious at all times, but when I went to the hospital, because they said they were going to rape me, they had to send me to be tested to see if I did conk out and then woke up. Because I can remember just when the guard came in, I was just like that, because the blood was pumping from my face, my elbow. Then they were giving me clothes to put on to go down and petrol bomb a shop down the road. I wasn't even able to stand.
The judge described how they cut your hair
this.
And this was described in court as something that was humiliating, medieval, ritualistic, a punishment, especially for a woman. I can't begin to imagine how you went through all of that. But while they were doing that, while they were inflicting all this pain on you, how were they? How was their behaviour? How was their temperament?
They were laughing. They were ordering chippers. They were going to shops to get drinks. They were acting like it was normal. They didn't see any of this as like, oh, we think she's going to die. Like, I don't know how I didn't. I'm being honest with you. I see myself giving birth to my daughter and my life flashed before me. So that's how I think that I was nearly gone, because I was getting flashbacks of giving birth to my own daughter. And then us laughing in parks and joking what I'd done with her. She's 18. This has gone back a good few years. So they were coming into my head. So I think my life was flashing before me.
Were you aware that they were filming parts of this?
Yeah, I was trying to block myself. And then I was getting more hidings for blocking myself. And they were saying to whoever was on the other end of the phone, isn't she pretty? Doesn't she look very pretty? And my face was like, my eyes, you couldn't even see my eyes. They were coming over. I was unrecognisable, like.
So they were sending these videos as text messages to other people and boasting about what they'd done.
Yeah. And they I think they ran to the main person of the drugs who they work for. And I seen it in the paper. They said, we have a girl here as a hostage and we're cutting her up. And he replied, quality.
That video was played out in court.
Only a little bit. It was only 10 seconds, a little bit of video where the man had the hatchet to my neck and where I was trying to block them. They didn't show enough of the in my feelings, they didn't show enough of the footage.
But from what you're saying, you remember every moment of that torturous attack.
Yeah.
And they threatened to rape you, as you've mentioned there. And you talked about your daughter. They
got up on
my
mum's face.
She
got the Facebooks. I had to, because they were torturing me. I had to give my mum's name and address. They went onto her Facebook. Then they ended up on my daughter's and where she goes to school. So they were saying they were going to go up to the school and get my daughter. And they were referring as a monkey, as a black man, to rape us.
Did you fear for your daughter in that moment as well?
At that moment, I didn't fear, because it was after six. So I knew she wasn't in school and she wasn't in my mum's house as well neither that day. So that's the main part that got me. And my daughter rang me yesterday and she was bawling her eyes out because of that part. That part got me big time.
How is your family after all of this?
They're not good. They're just so worried. My mum, my dad, my brother, my sister, the whole lot of them. They're just like in shock. And
I can see and by your upset at this, that this has had an impact that's gone far beyond the physical scars for you.
Yeah.
And it has impacted every one of your family and your loved ones.
Yeah.
Tell us about when Gardaí arrived. Tell us that moment.
When I heard that bar going through the door, I thanked God or whoever's looking over me. I thanked them only for the police came in that day. And when they came in, they were asking me, had I anything on me? And I'm like this. So the band guarded the woman, like I signalled her. I was like, help. So she brought me into another room and she asked me what was going down and what have you. And I told her everything. and I was brought straight to the Mata Hospital then, and she came with me. Fair play to her.
You said in your victim impact statement that if the police hadn't come in that day, to use your words, you were sure you were dead. And you said that animals wouldn't have done what they did.
Yeah, and I actually can take that back, but that's putting the animals down. The devil they are. They're the devil. Because animals wouldn't even do that. Like, and I'm actually putting animals down, talking, saying animals, you know what I mean? Mm. They're the devil. Evil, cold people. That's what they are.
Natalie, you spoke there about the extent of your injuries, what they put you through in that flat. You were in hospital for 5 weeks after that.
Yeah.
What were those weeks like?
I felt safe, to be honest with you, in the hospital. The doctors and nurses couldn't have been any more helpful to me. I was in shock, completely in shock of what happened to me. And I was getting the help I needed in hospital, so I kind of felt safe in hospital as well. And just seeing all my injuries and everything, it was disturbing.
What injuries do you still have now? What are you still living with following on from this attack 10 months ago?
Me back, where I got the spine, the disc removed and part of my spine bone carved. I have aches all over my body from the poles. I can, like, when I'm getting off the chair, I can feel it in my legs. I have scars from stab wounds all over me, and I've burn marks on my chest and my thigh. Well, they burned me with the father of the son locked up, burned me with his crack pipe. He stuck it to my leg.
And when you look at those scars?
Every day.
Does it bring it all back?
Yeah. I live it every day.
Are you getting the help and the support you need, Natalie?
Son has put me on to a place, I can't mention where it is, and I'm seeing a counsellor over there and a GP over there as well.
But how has this affected how you live your life?
I can't go out. I'm afraid to walk out, so I do go out. But when I see, like, four young fellas walking down the road, like, it reminds me of them, because they're all dressed in all these clothes that are out today. And if it's these bright nights now, I don't go for walks around, and I'm afraid to move outside the door.
Yesterday, those men were sentenced to between 8.5 and 14 years for their crimes, for what they inflicted on you, Natalie.
Yeah.
And they expressed remorse and regret in court for what they've done to you. Do you accept that?
No, they don't. They don't mean that. They don't mean that.
One of them wrote you a letter.
Yeah, he still doesn't mean it. He was the worst one that done this to me. Him and another fella. They were the two main ones.
What did he and say the other in the letter?
The other fella wrote me a letter as well, Braxton Rice, but I haven't got that yet. Mm. He says, "Dear Natalie Ennis, I am so sorry for the physical and torture pain we put you through. I've put you through. I am so sorry because I would never like it to happen to my mother or my sister. I accept what the judge gives me today. I agree to everything. That all the sentence I get, I will accept it, what the judge gives me." And then just his name on the end of it, Sean Conroy.
Does that offer you any solace at all?
No. He's not sorry.
But you were happy with the sentencing that was imposed yesterday?
I was very happy with the sentencing yesterday.
And you are slowly trying to rebuild your life, notwithstanding everything you've gone through and the scars from that awful night.
Yeah.
Are there supports you feel are lacking that you need right now, Natalie?
There is. I have to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. A counsellor is, like, I can talk. She's brilliant, my counsellor. I love her. She's an Indian woman. She's brilliant. She's great, but I need to see higher than a counsellor. They're getting everything in prison, and I'm out here as the victim, and I'm not getting it. Sure, I even went into the hospital where I wasn't feeling, I was feeling that I didn't want to be here anymore, and they sent me back out the door.
What hopes do you have for the future now, as someone who is a survivor, a true survivor?
Yeah.
And you're very strong.
Thanks very
much.
And
I can see that.
Yeah.
As you sit in front of me today. What do you hope for now?
all I hope for is a bright future of getting me house and my daughter and getting a job and to live a normal everyday life. A 9-to-5 job, but I just want to get back out on my feet and just try live a happy life with myself and my daughter.
Natalie Ennis, thank you so much for coming into studio. Thank you for talking
Thanks
to us
very
today
much.
And sharing your story.
Thank you.
And good luck for the future.
Thanks very much.
And that was Natalie Ennis speaking to me earlier, and you've been texting about that interview. Martina has texted to say, can you wish Natalie the very best of everything on her healing journey? My heart is broken for her and what she went through. If you've been affected by any of the topics that we addressed in that conversation, you can go to rte.ie/helplines for more information.